So we have Tammy Schondelmeyer coming to do our 5-minute devotional. Yes. Well, sorry. Speak thingy. A
mentor moment.
Yes. Loving your kids.
We can make a devotional out of that.
I'm sorry. Dun, 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 dun. No.
All right. I was asked actually to talk about husbands and relationship and give a couple of quick pointers or quick tips. I don't know. I tried to think what I was like when I was your age with younger children and what was going on in our marriage. And I came up with 4 things that I thought would be helpful in thinking through what that was like, being married and trying to be a great wife while trying to be a great mom to little kids and going crazy with all of it. The first thing that I came up with was the reception. And I'm just going to use a couple of words that maybe will stick and talk to you about what I mean by that. Do you ever think about what your husband is thinking on his way home from work about going home and getting home? I know. Is he excited about coming home? Or is he looking forward to a night of labor and trying to help his wife? And I'm sure he's doing a lot of both. But I thought about that one time when I had kids, your kids' age, and thought, oh, I thought about it because I wasn't doing it well. My husband would come home, and there was just nothing but relief. Oh, thank God you are home. Here are the kids. I got to go make dinner. I need you to entertain. And I was just tossing stuff at him, whatever it was. You know, and sometimes it was, I got to go. Toss the kids, literally, like some of you might have done tonight. In thinking that through, somebody said to me, why don't you ask him what he likes when he comes in the door? What a novel idea. Honey, what would be a help to you when you walk in the door? I did that, and it wasn't as complicated as I thought it would be. I mean, he really just needed a few minutes to unwind himself, maybe go change. He was happy. He didn't mind the mess in the house. I was just really thinking that was one of the issues. So I was cleaning up and trying to make everything look nice for him. I don't care. As long as the kids are happy and you've had a great day and you're playing with them, and if I could just have 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, that's easy. Like 5 minutes before I demanded something. So be a welcome refuge when he comes home. That's my first little tidbit. The next thing I would say is tone. Tone matters. Often our hearts are not as rough as our tone. And the things that we would like from our men or the things that we would like help with, sometimes when we're making the delivery about what we want, it's not said in the greatest tone. And I don't think we're being perceived well often because of our tone. And I think our tone really matters. We need to be perceived correctly. Are we letting our husbands know that we want to come along and we're beside them and not against them? You know, and it's sometimes just a matter of how I speak to my husband. Sweetie, right now, this is what I'm feeling. And I'm feeling like I'm falling apart and I could really use some help. And sometimes that is so much better than, what do you mean you can't? I need this and that. And obviously there's a difference in how we're speaking to one another. I tell you, this was true with us. My husband loves track and field. It is so boring to watch. But he loves track and field and football. Those are the 2 things. And I can remember doing loops around him with the clothing basket, and I'm getting a load, and I'm taking upstairs folding, and I'm coming back down, and he's still sitting there watching a game. And I can remember being so exasperated with him one day. Do you not see that I am working hard here? You know, really, and you can sit there and not do anything. And let's say it's his home, it's his refuge that we just talked about, and it was the way I handled it. It didn't come across well. It didn't come across well several times because we had that argument several times. And then I had this novel idea to just sit down and talk to him and share my heart and say, listen, I don't know what to do. I want you to be able to enjoy yourself, but I always feel lonely, like I'm the only one working and this is how I'm feeling. Well, boy, did that change things. You know, now, you know what, to this day, my husband watches football and track and field while doing the laundry. It's a win-win for all of us. He doesn't feel badly doing it, and I certainly love it. I mean, he folds and puts away. Those are the dreaded, yeah. So it's a good thing, but it mattered. My tone mattered. The next thing, partnership, and that goes along with, you know, coming along beside him. You're in it together with your spouse. I think it's really important for us to let our spouses know, and I hope I'm not stealing y'all's thunder. I don't know what you're going to be asked tonight. But I think it's really important for us to let our spouse know what goes on during the day in a great manner that, you know, shows your partners. He comes home, he's not there when you're disciplining the kids. He's not there when you're having all the fun stuff, too. For him to come home and hear about all of the negative stuff that took place, and I know it does, it takes place during the day, for him just to hear all of that and how hard your day was is not a partnership. You know, you can come alongside and share the good stuff too and let him know, these are your kids. This is what's going on today with our kids, honey. And sometimes I would even ask Clint, what do you think I should be doing in this situation? How should I? This is what I did. You know, would you have done the same thing? And kind of ask his opinion, because it's a partnership. And that matters. So be a teammate. I'll leave that one go. Availability is my last one. And this, I think, is important. We are so spent sometimes by the end of the day when our husbands come home. And you're tired. I mean, you're whooped. And go back to that watching track and field or football or whatever. Sometimes being available just means being present in the same room with them. I, at times, and I still do, just make it a point to go and sit in the same room with him while he's doing something. Maybe we're doing two different things, but we're in the same room. If there's ever an opportunity that I can sit beside him, I try to sit beside my husband. Not on one chair, but there's something about physical proximity. If it's reaching over and just putting my hand on his knee and rubbing his knee, there's just something about that that's really good, being available physically. The other availability, I'll say, is emotionally, being emotionally tuned in, being available to listen, not just listen and nod while you're making dinner and, you know, whatever, but really listen to his heart. That is so important. It's important for them. And the last availability is that availability physically, the other way too. I remember years ago, well, it was when I was in MOPS, actually. We heard a MOPS speaker, Jill Briscoe. And she likened her days to a Lazy Susan. You know what a Lazy Susan is in the kitchen? It's that cupboard that hardly anybody uses them in kitchens anymore. But it goes around, and you take cans and stuff. And she says, all day long, I feel like my kids have just been pulling cans off the shelf. And I'm that Lazy Susan. And I get to the end of the day, and there's a can of tuna fish. And I'm like, I've got a can. And granted, it's lousy tuna fish, but I got a can of tuna fish left for me. And I lay down at night, you know, book in hand or whatever. My husband says, hey, baby. I'm going, but I just got a can of tuna fish. That's all I had. You know, there's times, though, that you need to give up that can of tuna fish happily. And you will be blessed for that, too. And it's not always easy. Have those conversations with your spouse as well. Being available physically, whether it's just close proximity or physically, the whole gamut, or emotionally being available that way too. It's really important. So those four things. The reception when he comes home, I think, is really important. That kind of sets a tone for the night. Tone in general matters. Being a partnership, you know, together, being teammates with one another, and then just being available. Those are my four quick tips, okay? Thank you.
I want to put give up your tuna fish, ladies, on a t-shirt. Like right now. Right now. Right now. Okay, so let's have our speakers come up. Ladies in the front, gentlemen in the back. Look, aren't you guys so cute? You're so cute. Okay. I'm so excited. All right. So first things first, I want you to do a quick introduction. And I went over it in the email to you guys. So you can have a little prep time so I wasn't blindsiding all of you. So just a little introduction. Tell us how long you've been married, how long you've been together, and how you met, and then how you are the same and how you are different. So I know there's a lot of questions, but hopefully that kind of it all flows together. So which Blackwell wants the mic?
Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
I'll do the first part. We've been at Emmanuel for about 15 and a half years. We have been married. This will be our 25th year. So that's a big one. It's not till December, so I got lots of time to prepare. So we dated for probably the better part of 2 years, I think, before we actually married. We met in college in the library. I pretended I needed help in calculus. Wendy is a math whiz, and bingo, it was good. It was a good connection. But we have two sons. Luke is 19, and Benjamin is 16. And I'll let you take care of the rest.
Wow.
Hello. Oh, there. I don't know exactly how to tell you that we're the same, except that today my son heard one half of a phone conversation, and when I finished speaking to his father, he said, "Mom, you and Dad finished each other's sentences. I never even heard you say a complete thought." So I think we're the same in a lot of the ways we think now after 25 years. We're the same. He's taught me to like bike riding. We love being outdoors. We love good coffee. Those are some of the same things. Differences. He likes to get out of bed on Saturday morning and get dressed and ready to go, and I love to linger in my pajamas.
Bethany and I have been married for 32 and a half years. And some good. And we met in college at Geneva College in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. And we were friends for a couple of years before we started dating. Just had some of the same friends there. We have three children, two boys and a girl. Nate is 27, and he's getting married actually in April, so we're really excited about that. And then Seth is 24, and he's finishing up at Liberty, and Dara is 22, and she's finishing up at Liberty as well. Let me see what else. How we're a little bit the same is both of us like to be outside and do physical activity and like to get up and go. And I'll let you say how we're different.
Yeah. Well, I say about it, like one thing, we like to do stuff. And so my kids say we don't like to go on vacations. We like to go on adventures. And Dara always goes, "Mom, other people go to the beach and just lay on the beach." So, but we do like to do things. One of the ways we're different is that Dave is very punctual, and I'm a little more challenged in that area. I've gotten better at it, right?
It's gotten a lot better.
It presented much more of a difficulty, I would say, earlier in our marriage. And another way we're different is that Dave is somebody who processes, and so he processes internally. And I like to say that I think out loud. So that's another way I'd say we're different, right?
Yes. And if she ever hears me process out loud, she gets very scared.
Well, Maureen and I met about 25 years ago. I was stationed in Long Beach with the Navy. We've been married for 25 years. We knew each other for about a year before that. Pretty quick engagement, less than a year. We have two sons. One is 21, getting married in June, graduating from VMI, going to go in the Army. So all in 3 weeks, he graduates, gets commissioned, he gets married. So that'll be fun. That'll be fun, right? Yeah. And we have a 19-year-old son who's studying music at the University of Tennessee. Loves it. Go Vols. Go Peyton Manning. There we go. Famous graduate from Tennessee. How are we different? How are we the same? Well, I am normally normally very quiet and introvert, unless I'm talking about cars or with a guitar in my hand or on the floor playing with the boys or something like that. But generally, I'm pretty quiet. She is Irish Catholic. Girl, five older brothers, and I'll let her finish that thought.
Yes, he
Yes. He is more introverted. I am probably more social and outgoing. We stick together when we go to functions together to help bring the best of each other out in those circumstances. He keeps me calm, and I help draw him out. So it's a good balance of the ways that we're different. Ways that we're the same, I think I am very grateful that we both have the same oneness in our relationship with the Lord. We both really do our best to encourage and help each other to just put Christ first in our relationship, and that's been a blessing for all these years married, that we just work towards that together. And we love our boys. It's a lot of people used to say, oh, the teenagers are terrible and watch out for the teenagers, or even when they were twos, wait till the terrible twos and whatever. We're like, you know what? We just really like our kids. And I think that was even hard as now that we're empty nesters, is we miss them. A lot of my friends couldn't wait for their kids to go off to school. But we both are the same in how much we just really love our kids and enjoy who they've become. So.
Just going to go back and forth. That works for you guys. Okay, now on to the real questions, which I'm excited about. I'm excited to get the been there, done that perspective, but I'm super excited about the dude perspective. You know, it's very helpful. Thank you. Okay, so let's start with the ladies here. How do you balance your girl BFFs with your husband BFF, and how do they serve those purposes for you? How do you make sure that you're turning to your hubby BFF when you just want to turn to your girl BFF? So I'm gonna move it around this way for you.
So I think David knows, because he's more the introvert and I'm more the extrovert, that friendships are really important for me. Girl time is really important for me, especially growing up with five brothers at home and then having two sons, and I live in boy world. And so he knows that there's times that even though we love spending time together and doing things together, he knows that I need my girl time. And he, from day one, has fully supported that for me and the importance of my girlfriends. And there's actually times when I'll come to him with things, if things are happening or going on, and there's times he'll honestly say, could you call one of the girls on that one? Because he knows I need their perspective at times, and he has fully supported that with me, even from when we were newlyweds, going away for girl weekends. I've done that every year for about 24 years. We've had girl weekends, and he and the other husbands have fully supported us going away for a weekend and being together, because he knows it makes me a better wife and a better mother and a better friend if I can have that, you know, time with him, but also my girlfriend time. So.
I have
yes.
Something.
So
I am very appreciative that my wife has girlfriends, because that would be too much talking for me. I mean, no, really. But you know, and we've talked about this before. I mean, she only shares certain things for me, and I know I have a confidence in that, and I know that. There are some things that are reserved just for me, because, you know, we really are best friends. And but man, I really like it that she has a lot of girlfriends. It's really good.
You know, I will say one thing I found over the years too, that I don't know if it was intentional, but I gravitate. So my closest friends are ones that would say along with me that their husband's their best friend. And like, if a girlfriend says she wants to share, you know, something with me, and nobody else, I'm like, okay, I got to clarify that. Does that mean Dave? I can't share it with Dave. And, you know, there are times for that, but, you know, I don't want to, yeah, my closest friends are ones who, you know, they have a good friendship with their husbands. So, knowing Maureen and knowing she's an extrovert, I'm the other end of the spectrum. So let me just speak to that just very briefly, because I am the introvert, which doesn't mean I'm socially withdrawn. It just means that you guys drain me. I have to go home and re-energize at home quietly. And I think that for that end of the spectrum, Jay has always been good in supporting me and not forcing me to have girl time. And he's allowed me to have that time at home when I need to, you know, if I've been with the girls, he knows I need to come home and have quiet time. And he's given me that freedom and not made me feel like, why aren't you like the other girls? You know, why aren't you out there doing this or doing that? And so I have always appreciated that about him. So to the introverts in the room, that's okay too. And I think that that's important to know. So.
All right, moving on to children. We want this talk to be a lot about marriage and about us adults, right? Because we talk about our kids all the time. But it's very important in the marriage friendship dynamic. You know, you have little ones running around. So how do you manage that? How do you have time for one another with little ones around, not being mom and dad, and not even just being husband and wife, but also being friends? So how do you manage that?
So the first thing is congratulate you for being here, because we're kind of preaching to the choir. Can I say that, Tammy? Is she still here? All my choir people. Because you've already made the effort, you worked it out with your spouse to be here. So you're investing in your marriage, and you've let someone else watch your kids. Probably your husband, maybe not someone else. But and then there's mentor moms at all the tables who are willing to invest time in you. So, I mean, the question was, you know, what do you do for your kids? You know, pay yourself first, because and invest in something like this, or and other things, smaller groups, bigger groups, you know, getting away. I think one of the wisest things we did was when we were driving our kids somewhere, and I think some of our friends encouraged us. That is a golden opportunity in the car. Turn off the noisemakers, you know, and ask really good questions and listen.
You know, those little dudes, man, they get everywhere, right, when they're running around the house. And, you know, we always strive to put them to bed at regular times, you know, and have regular schedule for them. The tendency, though, was, man, okay, we just got them in bed. Now we go do all our own things, right? I mean, you get on the computer or Facebook or whatever you do on that, or you start paying bills, or you worry about those other things. And you know, we had to make the time for each other and not just go off and do our own thing. I mean, if you put the kids on a schedule, you know, we make time for things that are important to us. And if you know, she's very important to me, and I need to make time to do things for her. And you know, it is about time management when they're running around all the time, because you know they have their own schedule, right? But you know, you got to work around them. It's just a short period of time too. I know it seems like it's going to be forever, but it's really not that long. And some of us up here are kind of wishing we still had little ones, although we're too old for that now. Yeah, I mean, I think. Yeah.
Go ahead, Jay. You haven't said
anything. Sure. No, I just to add on to that. We were having dinner with another family years ago, and one of the practices they shared with us I thought was very good, and one of the things we've not done regularly or tried to make every single week, but I thought it was just a fantastic idea to emulate. On Friday night, that was date night, and they didn't call in a babysitter every Friday night because that's cost prohibitive in some cases, particularly around here. And they were a military family, so there wasn't family nearby to drop the kids off with. But they fed them mac and cheese, and they put them in bed at 7:30. And the husband grilled two steaks, and they had a nice dinner and a glass of wine, you know, at 8 o'clock in the evening, and they spent the rest of the evening together. That's not rocket science, but that's just, it takes a little planning. You know, your children, you know, depending on their ages, don't have to go to sleep at 7:30, but you put them away and close the door, yeah, duct tape, and But I thought that was just a great thing, and you could just, when the husband was telling us about that, you could just see the smile on the wife's face as she recalled, you know, how much she enjoyed those evenings together. So just a small practical thing, but it works very, very well.
And that's a perfect segue into my next question, would be, other than, you know, the good old standby of dinner and a movie, what kind of other things have you guys found yourselves doing over the years that are a date night?
You had some good ones.
I know, I left my notes over there. Well, now at this season of our life, Jay is phenomenal at finding hole-in-the-wall coffee shops. So we enjoy finding those unusual coffee shops, and a lot of times they're also donut shops. So we enjoy doing that kind of stuff, and that's unique. Physically, we love being on bikes. We love hiking. We do enjoy being outdoors. And I'm probably foregoing into another question, but to speak to being on bikes, I just have to tell you that the first time my husband came home with a road bike for me, I threw a mom temper tantrum because I said I didn't ask for a road bike. I don't want a road bike. I'm not joining you in that endeavor. That's yours. And as I've said, it's a miracle I didn't ride over my bottom lip. That was so poked out the first time I went out on my road bike. But I did it. And hundreds of miles later, we still ride bikes together now. And so I had to learn to pick up something he enjoyed doing. And so those are dates for us because we're out and we're doing something we enjoy and we're together.
There's a great pie shop in Occoquan. If you bike down, you can coast all the way down the hill, and there's mom's apple pie. So I bribe my family and to go ride bikes with me. If I buy pie halfway through the bike ride, they'll all ride with me.
I think, especially in this area, it doesn't have to cost a fortune, because dinner and a movie and babysitting is a lot of money. But I would encourage you, even find a friend with kids and swap babysitting, you know, with your girlfriend, you know, or another family. And I'll watch your kids this Friday, you watch our kids next Friday, and then you don't have to, it's a win-win, you don't have to pay for anything, but you give each other a break that way. But, and when we were at your age, you know, stage of parenting, and even still, we would find things that didn't cost a lot. We would go for a walk around Burke Lake. We do a lot of our best conversations when we go on long walks together. It doesn't cost anything, but he likes to trailblaze and never go on the same trail twice, and so we end up going for long walks. But it doesn't have to be a huge, fancy, expensive, romantic. It's just about finding quality time together wherever you can snatch it, especially at this stage. And we were big too on putting the kids to bed regular time and giving each other that time, even if it was like that. We had dinner or dessert together, or just sit beside each other and watch a movie at home, because it's a lot more cost efficient than going out. So it's just about being intentional. It doesn't have to be difficult or complicated, or, you know, and then just, that's my suggestion, find a friend to swap with so that you can also encourage each other to do that. We'd also would find other couples to go on double dates with and things like that, to find another couple that there's a relationship. Sometimes it's easier for us as women to be real social and relational, and not as much for our husbands. So if you can find a couple that you both click, that's really a special relationship that I would invest in, to just have that, so you're sharing life together with another couple.
You know, Beth and I, even now, you know, there's a home project that we want to have done, right? So a date is going to Home Depot sometimes, right? Because we go to Home Depot, we look, you know, we try to find this thing that we want to do the house together, and there's a lot of great dialogue that goes along with that. And it's almost like you're accomplishing something together too, which is kind of fun. And man, it gets it off the to-do list. That's really, really a bonus. But I mean, we're hanging out and having fun while we're doing that, and it's a date for us a lot of times. you know, sometimes sweet frogs involved at the end of that and that kind of thing too. But you know, trying to pick things that we would do together, that we accomplish something for our family, has been good for us as well.
Yeah, anybody familiar with Drama Fever? Korean drama on Roku. So, well, this was more of our empty nester thing that we just decided to do, is watch. It's subtitled, so you can't fall asleep on the couch or you miss the whole thing. So I'm more engaged with it. And this is probably not the best example, but we share a ministry together. You know, Maureen teaches preschool, so. Yeah, I'm in the government, and so we decided we would teach together, so we teach two-year-olds together. So you know, Rachel's in our class, and we had Andy in our class last year. So it's been kind of a ministry. For you're saying, well, why would I want to do that? Well, maybe you could drop your kids off and go do something else with your spouse. Teach fifth graders, or start in junior high like Jay and I did. And then work down, yeah.
Yeah. So, moving on to slightly deeper topics, what do you do when you just don't want to be his friend? I mean, when you don't want to be her friend too, but usually it's, I just don't want to be his friend. Right? Right? Yeah?
Just tell me I'm right.
Yes, you are right. You are right, because we all have hard days, and it's hard being a mom of preschoolers, and you are exhausted, and you are drained, and you don't like anybody some days by the end of the day, and including yourself. You know, you were really hard on ourselves, and so it's not liking anybody. I would have days like that. I'm like, I don't like the children. I don't like you. I don't like anything. And he'd go, oh, honey. I go, I'm leaving, and I don't know when I'm coming back. And he'd go, you're fine. Just go out, go for a walk, just take the car. Because you have days like that. It's hard. Mothering is hard. And so I think what I then held on to, and what I still hold on to now, because marriage is work from the beginning all the way through. But feelings change, you know, that when you have days where I just don't like him or I don't want to be his friend, we all go through that. But your feelings can change from one minute to the next, from one hour to the next, but hold on to the truth of the commitment that you made, you know, when you were married. You know, God made two one, and you hold on to that truth, because feelings can change and fluctuate, but the truth stands forever. And so we just know there's going to be days that are hard, that maybe we're not feeling very friendly towards one another, but it doesn't change the fact that we are committed for life, and that's not going to change. So we give each other a lot of grace with that. When there's days that we are like that, we hold on to God's truth that we made a forever commitment for life. So
we had the same answer on that one. Oh. We did. We worked.
So for those of you whose husbands travel in the room, so I'll talk to you, because my husband traveled a lot. So, I don't know if somebody told me this, but one thing that I try to remember is when he comes back, I want him to come home. So, because it's real easy when you have little kids, you know, let's just say, you know, 1.5, 3, and 5, and they're gone for 2 weeks, that when he gets home, you might not be the person he would want to see come in the door. So I just try to remember, you know, I always wanted him to come home. I didn't want him to dread coming home. So for those of you that are, because I know in this room that there are those of you, military, non-military, that are like that. And then the other thing is, while he's gone, is to stay in communication. Like, we always, he still travels a lot, not as much actually as when my kids were little. You know, we try to talk every day, and he's traveled far away places, a lot of you know, so it's sometimes been a challenge, but that helps cement our friendship, that we, while he was gone, we communicated, try to talk every day, so.
Anybody else?
Okay. I'll just, maybe it's a little bit of a tangent, but about 10 years ago, my parents, after having been married for 40 years, divorced. So tragic. I mean, just something that I just never saw coming. It was a difficult time that naturally put a strain on our marriage and our relationship with each other. So there's a choice, you know, do you wallow in bitterness and find difficulty in my own marriage because of this, or do I use this as a forcing function to cement my own marriage? And that's what we consciously looked at each other and decided to do. My point is difficult times can bring you together, or they can drive you apart. The one you choose is very, very important. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I like tangents. I like tangents. So the next question is sort of phrased like I would ask you, ladies. But I think it's important to ask the men this question, specifically because my husband and I have been married for 11 years, and we've been together 17, so high school. And we know each other really well. But there are still sometimes where I'm like, I don't know what he's thinking. Like, I don't understand where you're coming from. I don't know how to help you. So when our husbands are facing those times that they're down, whether it's work or they're stressed, like my husband's in the military, so sometimes he has to remember that his airmen are over there, and I am not one of his airmen, but it's hard to leave that. So when your husband's down or focused or frustrated, how do you help him? And like I said, I think that question is worded like it's coming from, like I want you to answer, but I think it's important to get these guys' perspective on that.
And you too, as well.
I think the first, I guess the two words I would answer that question with is affirmation and respect. I mean, that's really the two things two of the top things we crave more than anything else is affirmation and respect. I've asked Wendy to follow me down some rather winding roads, and I'm speaking from my vocational standpoint. I left the military after 12 years and ventured off onto a totally different career and wound up starting my own business. That takes Wendy out of her comfort zone by a long shot. But I would say her encouragement and her willingness to follow me and affirm me along the way has been pivotal along and as to my success, what we have experienced. I would categorize it in that way, affirmation and her regard for me, particularly in front of the two young men we're raising in our house. So.
You know, it happens often, with work stresses and things that, you know, with me, that I will, really kind of get withdrawn. I mean, she can attest to that. And one of the things that I like about how she handles that is she senses that. And even though she doesn't know how she can fix it for me, because I a lot of times I don't know why I'm upset. I'm really upset. I've just got so much stress on me. I don't know how I'm gonna, connect all the dots and get through the next week of work or whatever it is. She senses that and doesn't. I'm gonna use the term pile on. In other words, ask me for things that may be on the list and may be perfectly legitimate for her to check up on. Have you done this? Have we completed this? Have we, talked to the kids about this? She doesn't pile on and senses that at the right time, and that's been really helpful for me to, and that's really the form of her respecting, you know, the things that I'm responsible for, as opposed to some of the things that she's responsible for.
So obviously life is more of a marathon than a sprint. So if you've only been married 11 years, I mean, if you asked us at 11 years, did we really know each other? I would say no. I mean, but marriage is sacred, and that's God's, you know, desire for us to become one. And it's a process. So going on 25 years, I think, you know, we've gone very far and still going. But I would easily, I mean, we had this conversation: is are we really best friends? And you know, you have to define what a BFF is and all that stuff. But God has made us one, and through the process, you know, so I can tell by a cough or, you know, just a tone in the voice that something's up, you know. And then so a word of affirmation, or just not trying to fix things, just listen. And, you know, Tammy, that reception is really important. What do you do that for when you walk in the door? That is so important to know for us as husbands. You know, what are we going to do? I mean, are we going to, and let's, you know, that's the battlefield for us, because we've been out, and for those of you who have working, you know, husbands are out there, they might be working, we've been gone 10 hours, 12 hours maybe, 2 hours, 2.5 hours in the car, you know, and then we're coming home and there's a list of 20 things. You're like me, at least the Navy taught me, I got a whole list of things I need to go through. One of them isn't, you know, fix this. Now it's do the dishes, help with the dishes, help. I mean, as serious as it took me 22 years probably to do something silly like help with the dishes. I know. It's confession time's over.
You like the ladies talking
to me before you get in trouble. No, I think when you were talking about that it's really important. It's about that affirming and even respect is listening to him, because often we can't fix it. We can't do their jobs. You know, there's no way I was going to be a naval officer, that's for sure. But even when, like, for example, when David retired from the Navy, and he was looking at what's the next job going to be, I was terrified, because as hard as it is being a military wife, there's a lot of security of, I know he's got a job, I know he's got a paycheck, I know we've got health coverage, you know, all those things. And now you want to do what? You know, I got kids at home, you just get nervous. And so when he was retiring and trying to figure out, it was like every day he was coming home with, well, I could do this, or I got offered this. And I started like having these little panic attacks, like what in the world is going to happen to us? Until I really realized, I just need to listen to him. He's processing out loud with me, because I am his best friend and I am the safe person that he can process through with. And I just needed to listen to him and give him my full attention. It's hard, even when the kids were little. If I wasn't giving him my full attention, because we're multitaskers as moms, I could be cooking dinner or doing whatever and he's talking to me and you're like, or answer a question for a kid or throw something at him. But I learned quickly that that was not showing him the respect that he needed and wanted. And I really needed to put everything down and give him my attention, including when he was trying to figure out what the next step job-wise was going to be. I just needed to listen and be a safe person for him to work through those things. And so, did I answer that?
Yeah. Sorry. You want me to go around? Over here.
Just right here.
Oh, this is a fun day.
I was just going to add, know your husband's love language. If you do not know that, you need to know that. One of Jay's is acts of service. And so when he's frustrated and there's no words and there's nothing I can say, if I make his lunch for him for the next day and he wakes up in the morning and it's already done, that speaks volumes to him. If I bring him a cup of coffee, because he's usually the one bringing me a cup of coffee, that turns the table, and I didn't have to say a word to him or try and engage him in conversation, but it still ministered to him. So take the time to know your husband's love language.
So then I guess the flip side of that would be when we as the wife and the woman are talking to our husbands, what has been your most effective way or conversation or a story in which you relayed to him what it is that you needed? It's the whole venting, I don't want you to fix it. I mean, do I just tell you? Don't fix it, just listen. Like, what's your nuggets or thoughts on that?
Okay, I really don't think I just got the question.
When you're explaining your needs to them, or even, I guess the question could be for you too, what is the best way for us as a wife to do that? Especially when we're not really thinking clearly, like I just did.
Well, it didn't connect to my brain. For me, the best way to do it is to just say it. And that was a realization. Somebody said, it is so hard. Well, but we've got 25 years in. So just because the things, you know, Tammy, you said you would dance all around Clint with baskets of laundry and he wouldn't see it. And for years that used to frustrate me because I'd be like, he sees me and he's choosing not to help me. Maybe sometimes, but I think a lot of times it just didn't connect there. It wasn't that he saw it and was choosing not to help me. It just was not connecting in his brain, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way. It's just the way they're wired versus the way we're wired. And so, and we just had a yuck about the dog yesterday because I came in and I did not set a good tone and I didn't express my frustration with this new puppy that I didn't ask for. if you just say it, it's gone a long way to help us in our communication. So
a couple things. One thing is I had to learn with Dave to the time. So I'm a night person and Dave's a morning person. And like when we go to bed, like I could start like a great conversation then. That is not, he just can't do it. He cannot have any kind of deep level of conversation pretty much after nine.
It's way past, yeah.
So
by the time she gets home, I'm done.
So, but I mean, that's important though, because I would get frustrated because I would want to start this conversation like,
Yes.
Well, it's not fair to him, you know. So that's one thing I'd say. And then another thing I'd say is I remember a time when our kids were little, and I don't even remember now what it was. I think it was when you were probably working a lot and gone a lot. And there was a period where there is a time that I also think it's appropriate for you to write out what you need to say to him, because I felt like I was too emotionally charged, and so I remember I wrote him a letter so I could express without, you know, getting accusatory or, you know, but letting him know what I was feeling. So I do remember that. So I've done that a couple of times. So I think that was helpful.
I think it is important about just telling him. I know that sounds, it's not hard. It really is that, because David has often said, I can't read your mind. And I'm like, well, we've been married a while. You should be able to do that by now. But he really can't. And then it's not fair to him. It's not fair to our husbands when we assume or want to put on them, well, you should read my mind because we're married. No, I need to communicate, and I need to just, if I need help, I mean, I remember when I was a mom and he came in and I'd had a stressful day and I said, look, you don't even have to ask me to take the children. Just take the child. Just take him from me. You don't have to ask me for that. That's just a given. When you come in, I'm going to need that. But I needed to communicate that to him, because otherwise I'd be like stressing out. Child's fussy. I'm still trying to cook dinner. And he's not getting it. Well, it's not fair. I have to communicate it to him. I have to just tell him, because our husbands are more than willing. They want their children too. And there were days it would be like, your son did this. it's a joint thing, but it is not fair to not communicate with them.
He was giving her the tap. Did you see that? He was like, I hate it. So Well, maybe not. Yeah. So sometimes the best friend will ask the hard questions, like, have you forgiven your son for XYZ? Or likewise, I might say, well, why do you feel guilty about that? And we got to say it in a nice, loving way, because there's a really tone, right? Tammy, you and Clint hit a home run this week, just by the way. I mean, great. Yeah. A BFF asks tough questions. And your spouse, you can. And sometimes, I can confess, it's been in my prayer journal to say it for over a year. I've been thinking of the right, praying for it. Maybe if I pray about it for a while, then I won't have to ask. And sometimes that works out, too.
That's not, okay. Oh. This is real life happening right here, people. This is what's going on. That happens in my house every night, and I really need to stop doing that. I roll over, turn the light off. So how was your day? He's like, what are you doing? It's 10:30.
This is a good time to talk. Like, no, it's not.
And I can't be offended by that either. Gosh darn it. So our theme this year is to embrace rest and to celebrate lavishly and notice the goodness. So can you give us some thoughts about how you do that together in your marriage?
I'm going to do this.
Okay.
I'm going to help you out there.
Okay.
I think each of those can be a date night. Make it a goal that you go out with your husband and each one can be a topic for the date night, which... Also, I want to encourage you that the best use of your money at this stage of your life is babysitters. Get a list. I mean, we're a military family, so we did not have family here. And so I remember when we moved here, our oldest was in kindergarten, so I started as an imam. But that after that first meeting, man, I had Mary Beth and Deshua's phone number. I'm like, you have children? I'm like, you have children? How many kids you got? How old are they? And we would make it a priority every duty station. I would work hard at getting babysitters because it's worth your money to be intentional to get out with your spouse. And it was also for our children to see that we were putting our relationship before them. That's a really healthy thing to show your children, that this came before you, and it's going to be here when you're gone. And so we are going to make it a priority, and we're going to go out because we love you so much. We are leaving, and we're going out on a date, and including getting away for weekends. I know it's hard, and sometimes it's so hard to get there, but when you do get away for a weekend with your spouse, it is so worth it. So I would encourage you to do that. It's a really great example to set for your kids. And the kids would get giddy. They'd be like, you going on a date? Where's dad taking you? I mean, they would get excited for us, and that's a great example, especially now as some of us are launching our kids into marriage, that they saw that since they were young, we made it a priority. So it's worth your money, your time, your energy to do all that.
Just going to say Hershey Spa and Resort.
Chocolate. What was the question?
How do you lavish?
Maureen's got it written down right.
Right,
notice your goodness.
You want my
answer?
No, I don't. I'm good. Now I got my focal point back. One things that that I don't do well is rest, and she's actually been on that. On me about that a lot lately, so now I know where that's coming from. It's clearly coming from here, but I appreciate her for that, and allowing me to, chill out on a Saturday afternoon, and not feel like I have to be doing something all the time. It's really hard, and it doesn't get easier as you get more responsibility. As kids grow up and things like that, but we. We do make it a point to do things together that both of us enjoy, on a regular basis, and we are constantly thankful and look back on all the blessings that, that God has given us, and that's one of the ways that you can celebrate, you know, His goodness in your life. Because, man, you know, when you see all that faithfulness behind you, you know, it makes the struggles that you're going through right now a little bit easier. You know, because you've seen that faithfulness, you've seen what He's done in your life, and I think that's one of the ways that, that we try to do that. And you know, when we were first married, you know, we would take time to go away on a weekend, and but we would go to like Tyson's Corner, you know, to a hotel in Tyson's Corner or something like that, but to get away from the house, away from the kids, you know, that kind of thing. And I mean, it was a sacrifice from a financial standpoint, and but we, it was really important for us to do that, to get completely away from the routine so we could really focus on each other. And I think, you know, from a lavish standpoint, that that would be a way to start doing that.
I married the introvert. I'm big about birthdays, so I like to make a big deal out of birthdays. Wendy's families did not. I mean, they can give birthday presents like from last year, this year, and you know, it's really no big deal. My house, if you got the birthday present, you opened it right then, you know, and it was a, birthdays were a big deal. So we've tried to make and celebrate birthdays in a way that it sets a good example in front of our children. So, and I want them to celebrate their mom and be encouraging and give gifts to her. Not because I want them to, you know, go out and buy something, but because I want them to appreciate her. And I feel like birthdays have been a great opportunity for us to celebrate each other. And we are the same age. So milestone birthdays are fun for us because we can go off and do something together and celebrate our birthdays simultaneously. So, and we did that when we both turned 40 some years ago. So I cashed in all the airline miles and got a couple of plane tickets, and I found a 5-star treehouse in some island, and we celebrated for a week our 40th birthdays, and it was a lot of fun, and our kids thought that was great. So and that's a memory and a story that we tell and retell often, and something that we enjoy. So.
Was it really a treehouse?
There's only 3 walls.
What? Where was this?
I'll tell you later.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. I want to go stay in a tree. Okay. So I have one more official question. So, ladies, please be thinking if you want to we want to open the floor for questions. Because I know it's hard when we say, get your questions ready. It's like a month in advance. But, like, when they're talking, sometimes things come up in your mind. So get ready for that if you want to. So my last official question, which some of you have already kind of touched on, but kind of share a picture of how your friendship when you were first married and then kind of how that has developed over the years.
Introvert.
I know. Maureen, you have answers down. Are you ready? Yes. Let me think about this. You're ready.
So when we were first married, I used to get violently ill when we would go shopping. I mean, it was bad. And now, I mean, one of our date nights is like, we'll go shopping, and I find the nicest couch that's in the store, and I just kind of hang out. I may get on my phone. I may, you know, surf the web a little bit. But she's having a great time. I'm having a great time because I'm there, but I'm not really there. Our friendship when we were first married, you know, we were on these soccer teams, you know, with other friends that were our age. You know, none of us had kids. You know, that's the way kind of we started our social lives together. She played soccer in college, and I didn't, but we wanted to do things together, right? So we played soccer together, and then we had started having kids, and that limits, you know, hanging out with friends and stuff like that, right? So, but we always did vacations together. We planned those vacations. We did them with the kids. You know, we wanted to be together. I talked a little bit about the times that we would set aside to go away for a weekend to get away just us, you know, because the kids do kind of get in the way of a lot of stuff. And you know, as we started getting involved in ministries, we were always involved with couples our own age in Bible studies, in groups, fairly large groups too, you know, since we were first married and have continued that. Some of our friends that we're in Bible studies with now that we've known for almost 30 years, and they're that close to us. I mean, we've seen, we're marrying our kids and that kind of thing. You know, and as we moved along and you know, now she's in women's ministry, and clearly I'm in ministry, but I'm not, you know, in women's ministry. You know, I hear a lot about that. But even before that, you know, we did premarital mentoring together. We're together in teammates. So we choose things to do together, not just ministry things, but also things outside of ministry, because we like hanging out with each other. And it has reinforced our comfort with each other, our ability to give grace to each other. You know, I don't think there's something I could do that she wouldn't, you know, see, you know, a perspective of mine or because she understands me so well, and knows that I always put her first as well too. I think that's how our relationship has really changed over time, is because we've really sought out those things to be together. We've sought things to continually be together rather than go off on our own little endeavors.
So I think Maureen and I have kind of talked about how we've progressed and grew. One of the first things, I think it was probably at a weekend, to remember that the couples can go off and amazing. If you haven't gone to one of those, I highly encourage you to do that. I think it was through one of those events, or it might have just been a men's retreat. Someone just looked me in the eye and says, "You need to, because we had boys, take your boys out and teach them how to be men." And so we had a daddy day every Saturday, almost every Saturday. So it's not too rigid. I'd take one of them. Sometimes it'd be both, depending on the schedule. And inevitably, when this would go all the way as they grew up, and we just had one last week, we went through purity and things like that. So inevitably, the question I get when I come home is, what did you talk about? I mean, specifically, list. Give me all the things that you talked about. And I go, and it was, it bonded us. Believe it or not, it bonded us. And now we have a habit that every Saturday we go out on a date. Now, we try to do it. She's usually out shopping, looking for dresses, right? Right, Bethany? Yeah, we're looking for dresses and things. So we call it the dress stress is what we're going through right now. So, but, okay.
I think that I remember when I was a newlywed and we were stationed overseas, and I met my first friend overseas, and they were married for 5 years and they had two little ones. And I remember asking her, what is it like to be married for 5 whole years? That is so long. And it felt that way to me, that it was so long. And I felt like I knew David then, and I loved being a newlywed. I loved all those firsts. And I thought, how great will it be that we could say we're married 5 years? That's a long time. Well, and now we're like working on 25 years, and it is a blink. I know it feels like your days are forever, but your years are going to go by really fast. And it's as much as I was excited then, we do know each other so much better now because we've done so much life together. We've done duty stations and deployments and children and parents' health and life and death and so much. And so when you share life with someone, you see all of it, the good, the bad, together, and you're still by each other's side. That is a deeper friendship than I ever could have imagined when I was that newlywed asking my friend, what's it like to be married 5 years? It's just, it's a great adventure. Hang in there. And it's a sweet friendship as the years go by, because you do life together, and you can look back and see God's faithfulness and the way you've grown and encourage each other. I'm a much better person today because David's in my life, and he's probably say the same thing. I think we could probably all say that about our spouses. We're better people and better spouses because of each other.
Oh, we're good? Okay. The introvert doesn't want to say anything.
Oh, well, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions? One person? We always have questions. I want to ask a question. Nobody has any questions? Oh, yes. Please. You and your spouse are not on the same page, or how do you get on that same page before the kids sniff that out? Because you know they do now, right? Like, I'm going to ask mom because she's going to cave. You know, dad's not going to. So, and I'm sure that only gets, like, I'm thinking back to when I was a teenager. Like, I can't imagine, it's not like, I want a popsicle, who should I ask for the popsicle? Like, there's way more intense things happening. So how, as you're going into those times, how do you... Yes. Emotionally? Militarily speaking, how do you present a united front? What are your tactics in this thing called teen war?
So you have to pick your battles. So we had a teenager who didn't want to go to youth group anymore. And guess who was on the youth group council? So he went to another church's youth group for 2 years. And he turned out fine. So you choose your battle. I mean, I think I might have turned it off.
When those times came, we would talk about it together first, privately, before we would talk to the child face-to-face. And all three of us are proof that you will get through the teenage years. You will live, you will survive, and actually, we loved the teenage years. I mean, I was scared. I remember... just being more than terrified that my child was going to Robinson. I was like, I don't know what that place is, but I don't want my child to go there. It was huge. But God gives you a lot of grace, and you have a lot of years to get there. But it was exciting years. Don't dread them or fear them. I remember going through the purity class with the Coles and thinking, how are we ever going to get our kids through these 4 years with purity and integrity? And you can do it. You know, God's a great big God, and they're sweet years. I loved our teenage years.
I would say that to remember you're on the same team, and that the goal is for you guys to be united. So, you know, you want to discuss things to the extent you can, and you can't always. You want to discuss things ahead of time. You know, there it will come up that, you know, something will come up. But the other thing I'd say, don't fear. We had one that was particularly strong-willed as a toddler. For like, people say the terrible twos. The twos are nothing. Threes were a nightmare. So I remember fearing the teenage years. But somebody encouraged me that
So if you train, you know, if you address these their will now, you don't have to fear. And I will say that's true. So you're in the stage now. Don't let them run all over you now. So, and I'm not saying, you know, he was still strong-willed, but we, you know, we tried to address it. And then he gave us no trouble in the teenage years, really. I mean, he was still independent and determined and all those things that made him such a hard, but the teenage years were not, because we addressed it where you guys are now. So that's just what I'd say.
Yeah, I guess I would say, you know, you might think you're in control, but you really aren't, even now. and one of the things that we did with our kids is, you know, a lot of times we would turn it back on them and say, well, what do you think you should do? And, you know, it really is pretty convicting to them if they're trained, if you're modeling, you know, a biblical life and a life centered on Christ, and they're seeing it in some of their peers, perhaps at church and youth groups and things like that, to ask them, you know, to kind of turn it back on them and say, well, what do you think you should do? We had some of our kids, you know, want to go to certain movies that you know, they shouldn't have gone to. And when we asked them, you know, they say, well, yeah, I probably shouldn't do that. But you know, there's a point in time where you need to let them make some of their own decisions. And you know, that leash as you let it out there is really scary, right? You know, you want them to be able to think independently and learn how to do that while they're still close enough to you and the types of decisions they make, you know, have limited impact to them. But don't think that you're really in control. Yeah, you're really.
The goal in the teenage years is to influence, right?
Right.
Not, mm-hmm. You know, as they get older, it's less control, more influence.
I was just going to say, you do, in a sense, have more control now, but as they grow older, the goal is not to control. The control becomes less, and your goal is to influence them. So.
I know one of the things we've seen with our boys, too, as they became teenagers, is other people investing in them. They're going to hit that point where your voice is da-da-da-da-da, you know, but they're listening to other people, and we have been so blessed to have small group leaders, to have youth pastors, to have other people, other men investing in our boys' lives. And those have been so getting to know people and letting them get to know your kids as your kids are growing up is a great thing to set that up in those transitional years where it's natural for them to pull from you. But the teenage years with our boys have been, yeah, they've had their challenges. That would be a lie to say, but they've been wonderful, too. And getting on this, you know, we're not through them, but we are really enjoying our boys and watching them grow and make these decisions and not having to control everything that they choose to do. So.
Hit that wall.
I'm not sure that I have like a checklist to tell you, but I can tell you that we hit that point. And we hit that point when we moved here. We had been 4 years at Fort Bragg. I had birthed two sons. Jay had been gone a tremendous amount, and I wouldn't say we reached that point where I said, I can't do it anymore. We had reached that point where I was apathetic. I really didn't care. And by the grace of God, he brought us to Emmanuel, and there were unbelievable couples ahead of us that took us under wing and invested in us. We had to be willing to listen to them and follow their model, but I think I remember getting here and Jay took me out on a date, and I promise you it was more awkward than our first date. It was like I didn't even know the guy I was sitting across the table from. And so it was just a slow process of putting things back in. We were committed. Neither one of us was going anywhere. And we knew that, but it was, we had to give each other the space and the time and rebuild that relationship to get to a point where we truly, we liked each other. We never quit loving each other, if you could say, but that we really enjoyed being together again and solidifying that, the marriage and then the family unit. So, yeah.
Bethany, I'd say don't be afraid to ask for help. We all need help. Marriage is hard work. And you know, when many of us were getting married, we had premarital counseling because we needed help, right? And some of those things that we learn in premarital counseling, we still use in our marriage. But that doesn't mean that in these almost 25 years, we haven't asked for more help. And it is... being accountable to other couples, being invested in other couples' lives so that we have help that way. But if you need to get help professionally, there's nothing shameful about that. We all need help and encouragement. And so just ask, because, you know, we want to keep marriages together. So don't be afraid to ask for help, I would say, if you're at that end. Even to each other, say, I need help. I don't know what's going on. And talk to each other about that, but seek professional help if you need it too. There's nothing wrong with that. We need others in our lives. So oh, right back there. The answer is no, just in case you were wondering.
Well, I think we've heard tonight you can be married 40 years and it can fall apart. So I think we never make it. And the other thing I say, and this is why I think all of us are on this, one of the reasons we're on this panel, I don't want to just be married 40 or 50 years to him. I want to be married 40 or 50 years to him and really like him. Because, I mean, honestly, I know couples that have been married 40 or 50 years, and I look at it and say, I don't want their marriage. I mean, I don't. That's not the marriage that I want. So, you know, we have to keep working, you know, we have to keep working on it. So I don't think we ever... arrive, we can ever get apathetic, because it can go south.
Yeah. So. You know, we've been married, you know, over 32 years, and there is so much invested in there. You know, when I think about all the things that I would lose if I decided to, you know, walk away, because that's what I would be doing. You know, when we got married, we, you know, set our vows to each other, and we meant that then. You know, some of you may have only been married a year or two or three or four or five or, you know, whatever. And there's an investment that you've been making, you know, over that time. And it's an eternal investment. And to throw that away, I think, would be tragic, and that's not what God wants. And it is worth fighting for, you know, starting over, you know, and I hate to use this as really an example, but I mean, you see it, you know, on TV, you read about it, the disaster it is when divorces happen, what happens with the kids, what happens financially, what, you know, and really the pain it causes, causes God as well for that. You know, I think all of us are selfish, right? I mean, we all want what we want, you know, ourselves. But, you know, that's not what a marriage is. I mean, we're supposed to be one. It is worth fighting for. Man, I tell you, there have been times when I've been really, really mad at her. and feeling very underappreciated for all the things that I'm bringing to this, you know, relationship. But man, when I step back and really think through, you know, what I've been blessed with, it lends a different perspective. But we have to be able to do that. And you know, she was talking about writing things out, you know, writing a note. I mean, a lot of times I will have to write what I'm feeling inside and read it, because and try to, you know, cross that with what does Scripture tell me. You know, are these really just, you know, irrational emotional feelings that I have here, or is this something that's real? You know, there needs to be a measured approach to that kind of thought process, because you're just throwing too much away.
And I hope none of you all judge me.
No way, sister.
Some days are like, you know, the brightest of days. Your child says mama for the first time. But there are those days that you were like, all I ever wanted to do was marry this man. All I ever wanted to do was have his children. But at this moment, right now, all I want to do is not be here.
We have all been there.
I know, okay. It's a little cheesy, but
it's not.
You know those things when people are like about to run a marathon and you want that, like, it'll get better?
We've all been there. No one's here to judge you, because we all have those moments, and it's hard. Being a mother of preschoolers is exhausting and draining, and it is hard, but you're not alone in that at all. I would encourage you that it is a season, even though there's days it feels like forever. This is a season of your life. It's not going to be forever that you're using your last tuna fish can, you know. It just feels that way. And I had a friend when I would call, and I would call and talk to her about that very thing, and she'd say, it's a season of your life, it's not forever. And even if I could just find one good thing about being a mother of preschoolers, when he was underwater and I couldn't see him for months at a time, and the lawnmower wouldn't even start, and I'm crying in my driveway because I have to mow the stupid lawn because the man's underwater. And I mean, it's hard. It's really hard, but it is a season, and there's times to try and see that it's not going to be forever. And it's okay to admit that it's hard, because we want to be super moms, and we want to do it all, and we want to raise these perfect, flawless children, and yet I just screamed at him, so how can I have to, I'm going to destroy him for life because I'm yelling at him over not eating his lunch, you know, I mean, but that's why you were here, you know. That's why I went to MOPS, because I would come into MOPS and go, I'm not going crazy, I am not the only mom going through this stage, honestly, I'm not the only one. I literally would feel that way, because he'd be gone, and I'm not the only one feeling these struggles or hating my children today. How could I hate them? I gave birth to them. But it's just hard. And so I applaud you all for being here, because we need each other to affirm mothering, because it's the greatest gift God's ever given us, to be mothers. And if we can affirm each other, that's why you're here. I'm glad you're all here for that.
I was thinking one thing. Yeah, I mean, you're here, and that's good. But the one thing we haven't maybe talked about, we should have, is we can always go to our Heavenly Father. So I do remember falling on my bed sometimes and saying, I do not know what to do. I mean, completely spent. But that is a good place to be. So
when you're on your knees and you're completely dependent on the Heavenly Father. So, and I was thinking the other thing encourage you to do, I should have said this right at the beginning, is pray for your husbands. Pray specifically for your husbands. They should be at the top of our prayer list. And when things are hard, pray all the more for them. So, anyways.
Well, I think before we go back to, we're right up against the time, I know, but this, I think this was really good. For me, it was really good. If you could look behind you, there's lots of people just like you. Like me crying. I was hoping one of you gentlemen could pray for us. Would you? And then please talk before we head out the door. We don't have very much time, but.
Father God, thank you for Bethany reminding us that, yeah, we can try to run that marathon in our own strength and try to like each other and control our feelings. But Lord, we need to trust in you. We need to get on our knees and pray. Pray for our kids, pray for our spouse, pray for our own sanity, just for our own learning how to surrender and to give our all to you. And how much more of an example in life is giving birth to a child and then raising that child, them even taking the life and strength out of you, and yet giving life and being a part of creation and being a part of your holy plan of a sacred marriage where two become one and built on love and respect, that we would glorify you, that our children would become Christ-like and then would to share the love of Christ with others, and if it's your will for them to be married and have children. And Lord, you said be fruitful and multiply and go and make disciples, and we are even discipling our children, helping disciple our spouses. So thank you, Lord, for what a great evening, and just bless the rest of the conversation and even the conversations that maybe not tonight, but tomorrow or the next couple of days we can have at home and encourage one another. We pray all these things in Jesus' precious name. Amen.
Thank you. Let's give him a hand, guys.